When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your very sunny Monday morning edition of the Kings of Anger Ipswich Town podcast. I am Mark Heath, joined by my two best friends, Stuart Watson and the boy Rossi. Really stretching the definition of boy there now, Ross. And friends, it's the ultimate good news, bad news, isn't it, to start today? Bad news, Ipswich Town have been relegated. Good news, Ipswich Town women have been promoted. And also, it's bloody lovely. And I had breakfast in my garden this morning. So that kind of tips the balance for me. Friends, how are we today? Stu, how was the trip to Newcastle?
It was long, but yeah, it was enjoyable. Yeah, we all went our own separate ways at the weekend, which was a bit of a rarity. So, tutored up there Saturday morning. I do love going to Newcastle. When you sort of first arrive in the city, and it's like a St. James's Park is like a cathedral set up high in the middle of the city, isn't it? It's their mecca. It's a one club city. And I really like the people up there. You always get a warm welcome. You feel that sort of connection between Ipswich and Newcastle fans, and the Bobby statue and the chants from both sets of fans. I thought Newcastle fans were stark contrast to some of the chants from Arsenal fans the previous weekend at Portman Road, sort of mocking and pointing a bit of fun. Newcastle fans applauding Ipswich at the end was nice. So, yeah, I think Ipswich will be wishing them well going forwards.
Mm. So, Stu, you drove up Saturday morning. That's a long old drive, then covered a game of football, stayed Saturday night. Ross, you did the reverse. You went up Friday, one of your drivers, one of your many drivers, and then stayed Friday night. Did you go have a night on the Toon?
A little bit, yeah. Big shout to Liam from Crew, obvious. Of course. He drove me. So, we went out and met up with good old Matt L, who people may not know him, but he plays five-a-side with me. And he was with his missus, and we went out on the Toon, as you said. We didn't go mental, obviously, because we had work to do the next morning, but I had a few just to get myself ready to take on the Toon army. I want to sort of apologise to anybody listening.
You weren't playing, Russ.
Yeah.
still got to make sure to get the snappy snaps. I've still got to make sure
that's
to
true.
Make sure
you need
they're
a few
not blurry
beers in
and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, still, I know I'm not playing. But if they needed me, with the injury crisis we've got at the moment, to be fair, mate, they make it desperate. McKenna made
what was it, 25 goals for Chantry under 15s? I mean,
back in the day.
McKenna's seen those tapes.
Yeah, scored a hat trick for this, seven aside a few weeks back.
Well,
so,
get him in.
There we go. But before we start, though, I want to just say my internet is just like town, going down at the moment. So let's. I may disappear at one stage, so although I'm sure it won't be too much of a worry, because you two fine gentlemen will do a great job, I'm sure.
Well, as I proved last week, I carry this on my own. Stewie disappeared to shepherd a bunny. I was left just talking to myself for a little bit, like the pro I am. True story before we get going, friends. I once shook Alan Shearer's hand in a nightclub in Newcastle when I was on a night out there, when I was in Journalism College in Darlington. Went for a night on the Toon, met Alan Shearer and Gary Speed. Alan Shearer, surprisingly large.
Can we dig a bit deeper into that? How many pints deep were you at this point of exchange?
I think
how enamoured was Mr. Shearer?
He was out with, I can't remember, there was quite a few of them out. And obviously, he was literally like a god in Newcastle. So that there's quite a lot of attention around them. And me and a couple of friends kind of drunkenly wandered up to them and thrust our hands out and shook hands with I say him, Gary Smead, a few of the other boys. I can't remember now, but I was most struck by the actual physical size of Shearer. For some reason, I had him pegged as quite a small individual, but he's actually quite a chunky. Well, I say just chunky is unfair. He was well built, a bit more hair back then as well. My main memory of that night is various Newcastle chaps trying to start fights with me, particularly at the time, because I looked like the sort of person who might be up for that, I suppose, because I had a shaved head and eyebrow shavings and all that, and lots of drunken chaps from Newcastle coming up to me going, "Hooray!" That kind of stuff right in my face. But yeah, I remained unfighty that night, although I did see bouncers open a door with a man's head that night as well. When they chucked him out, just picked him up and lobbed him straight through a door. That was nice. But yeah, Newcastle, a lovely place. I'm digressing, friends. I didn't really think I'd end up here. Shall we move to the game? Ipswich Town lost 3-0 at Newcastle. Grimly predictable. Another red card. Two red cards in 2 weeks. Didn't help themselves. Lots to talk about, actually, from this game. Lots of incidents. So let's kick off by hearing from Kieran McKenna about the result itself. And then clearly we're going to talk about relegation and various other things. And then we're going to finish, friends, on the up with the ladies' promotion yesterday, because Rossi was there for that as well. And that is something to be celebrated. But first of all, let's start with Kieran McKenna talking about the result.
Yeah, look, we've come here in a really difficult situation, not just in terms of the league, but to be honest, in terms of availability. Getting a fit squad and team out of players in the right position has been a challenge this week. So we knew Newcastle were in fantastic form at home and a great momentum, and I've blown the last couple of opponents away. So we knew we had to manage the game well and try and take some of that momentum away in the early stages. And I thought we'd done a pretty good job of that and carried a little bit of a threat going the other way as well. And with 11v11, I think we can take pride in terms of how we've managed a really difficult game. With 11v10, the challenge was just too big. So, yeah, it didn't go our way.
All right, then, Stu, kick us off then. Opening thoughts on the game, then we can talk about the incidents. Most of the incidents, to be fair, happened in the first half, didn't they? In fact, all of them, pretty much. What are your overall thoughts on the game? Because clearly, going into it, we kind of pretty much knew that Town were going to get relegated. No one really seriously thought they were going to get a result here. What did you make of it?
Lots of themes that we've seen throughout this season, lots of themes that we'd seen 6 days earlier against Arsenal. Obviously, the red card making the sort of the narrative of the game very similar in that respect. Unlike in the Arsenal game, I thought they started really well in this. They were defending well. They posed a threat on the counter-attack. Weren't able to take two or three good chances on counter-attack openings. Clark stuck one wide early on. Delap had the big one charging away from a Newcastle counter, and I kind of wanted him to go alone, but he tried to play the pass to Enciso and the move went. So that was, you know, if you remember, we said very similar about Arsenal's first goal coming from a similar thing. So, lack of ruthlessness, lack of discipline. Yeah, I mean, what else is there to go through?
Lack of players as well.
Lack of players. Yeah, I mean, that against the backdrop of 10 players being unavailable for this game, Axel was a surprise absentee. Jens only fit enough for the bench. And ultimately, yeah, everything about this season sort of coming to pass again, really. Ultimately, comfortably beaten.
I guess the first incident, if we take them chronologically, there are obviously two main talking points, but let's take the other ones chronologically. So the first incident was the Gamaish Palmer coming together with the disallowed goal. Rossi, how much did you see of this and what's your take on it? Because watching it back, I mean, you see those given all the time as fouls, but oh, and now Ross has gone. Good, this is going well. Oh, he's back. Are you with us still, Ross? Say something.
Yes, but my screen just went to black.
You just went green. You went green screen for us.
Green, did I?
Yeah. Which I quite like, match the top. Absolutely. So did you see that? I mean, I was just saying before you disappeared that you see, as soon as anyone touches a goalkeeper, it's immediately a foul, isn't it? But in this regard, and this is going to be a theme of what I'm going to say quite a lot of the time today, when we talk about these decisions, it felt quite soft that, Palmer basically, he was just sort of standing his ground and Palmer just kind of ran into him and fell over.
Yeah, I was the other end of the pitch, so I didn't know what was happening live, but obviously watching it back, it was very soft. But you take them, you take it. But obviously it didn't really matter in the end because obviously Newcastle went on to score, you know, 3 goals. But yeah, you know, when it's against you, you're like, you know, happy about it. But when it's for you, you're like, oh, okay, you know, I'll take that. But yeah, it's interesting. But
first 20 minutes, Ipswich have played really well, as I've just outlined. And then there was a little bit of a strange turning point. I've just marked it in the 21st minute. And I don't know if people picked up on this. Was a slightly strange exchange between Alex Palmer and Cameron Burgess.
Yes.
Over a goal kick.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. What happened? Because they just don't know. It's pushing and shoving.
It was a tense exchange. I don't know if it got necessarily sort of physical, I can't quite remember, but the two of them had a disagreement. That much was clear over a goal kick. Palmer had spent the first 20 minutes, every time he got a goal kick or a ball in hands, as most teams do, they sort of shaped up with the centre-half splitting to take it short and play out from the back, and Palmer would just wave them upfield, frantically wave them away. And he's obviously been given the freedom to decide when he wants to go long. And I don't know whether there was a disagreement over that, whether Burgess felt they should have played short, but Palmer, I think, wanted just to go long. That would be my summary. Kieran McKenna looked pretty bemused. He sort of, the crowd obviously felt it was some early time wasting. Kieran McKenna sort of turned around and looked at his staff and sort of pulled a bit of a face to say, I'm not sure what that was all about. And then it's 2 minutes later. I don't know if that has mentally affected Alex Palmer or if that's in his head, but that's when that disallowed goal comes, not long off the back of that. And I think he gets away with one here. We're going to go on to talk about Ipswich fans talking about the referees not good enough and we've not had the rubber green this year and certain, obviously, we're going to talk about some other key incidents, but this is one that certainly went in Ipswich's favour. Certainly falls in the category of you can't sneeze near a goalkeeper these days without it being a foul. Like, for me, he's a goalkeeper, he can use his arms. Bruno doesn't make any movement towards him. He just stands his ground and Palmer's got to be a lot stronger there. He just sort of bounces off of him. So, we're going to talk about some things that didn't go Ipswich's way, but that was certainly something that did.
Yeah, as a keeper, you've got to clean him out, haven't you? You're a keeper. Smack him. How about the Morsey incident before we get to the Johnson stuff and the Penner? Because, again, this is on. I haven't actually seen a replay that actually shows the incident itself other than the end of it. So, on the highlights I've seen, the ball is in the air and then the commentator says, oh, what's happening there? And it cuts back to the end of it, which is like Morsey apparently rugby tackling Willock. And then they go to a VAR for a potential red card. Did you get a better view of this, Stewie?
Yeah, right in front of me. And I saw it. That's right in front of a fairly low vantage point for the press box at St. James's Park. And I spotted it straight away. And I was sort of frantically sort of nudging Alex saying, look, this has just happened off the ball. It stemmed from an incident earlier in the game, actually, where Morsey and Willock sort of tangled, is the best way of describing it, in the pitch. That was pretty innocuous, and Willock actually massively overreacted to that one. I think sort of Morsey, it's one of those where a bit of a tangle, Morsey fell on top of him. He tried to get up and sort of apologise and help Willock up. Willock sort of, I think, got the wrong end of the stick, felt that Morsey had done it on purpose or tried to pin him as he tried to get up, or maybe he felt that there was a bit of a sarcastic tap round the sort of neck/shoulder, which was a genuine apologetic gesture, I think. So that was the back story to then what followed, and it's off the ball. And yeah, Morsey just sort of puts an arm, a hook of his elbow sort of around the neck of Willock off the ball and sort of drags him to the ground. When I saw it live, I thought, oh, if that gets picked up, he could be in trouble. And then when it went to VAR, I'll be honest, I was expecting some sort of punishment to come. So, again, we do have to mention both these two incidences, before we get on to sort of any burning sense of injustice with things that followed.
Yeah, on the radio. So now I listened to the whole game on the radio whilst pressure washing the various patios and decking at Heath Towers. And they were saying that it got quite chippy. And Morsey particularly seemed to be at the heart of that. So then it develops into sendings off, Rossi. Two yellow cards, second straight week that Tanner had a player sent off. Second straight week it's been, I suppose, a defender. Ben Johnson, this was different. in terms of how it happened. So the first yellow card was a booking for simulation, for diving, essentially. Johnson's charging through. Looks like Dan Byrne's going to clatter him. He takes to the sky, goes down, gets booked. Now, McKenna obviously afterwards wasn't happy with this. He said that it was enough just to reward the free kick. It didn't need to be a yellow card. And Joe Hart on Match of the Day was quite keen to make the point that although he thought it was a yellow card, he didn't think there was any kind of cheating or kind of malice in what Johnson did. It was just that he thought, you know, the brick wall that is Dan Byrne is going to stick his leg out. Johnson takes evasive action. Byrne somehow manages to pull the leg away. And in the end, there is no contact. If I ask you what you make of this and you say you didn't see it again, I shall not speak to you again for the rest of the podcast.
I won't do that then. No, I did see it, obviously, because it's right in front of me in terms of like Ben Johnson surging and going to the Newcastle defence. And when I saw it, I just thought, yeah, he's just been tackled by Dan Byrne. And then when I looked up and again, when I was like looking and seeing if I got the photo, I then went, oh, the referee's giving me a yellow card. I thought, oh, that's a bit, you know, a bit soft really in terms of that. Because, it proved, though, Town were obviously attacking and having some moments to, you know, try to get a goal. But I don't know what Ben Johnson can really do there. I know there's a few people saying, Ben Johnson is obviously an experienced player. You know, you should know a bit more to do from that. But, yeah, I think he's just at speed, isn't he? He's running at speed. I don't think there's anything he can do. I don't think he went really like, you know, some players really, really dive. But for me, I think he just sort of reacted to Dan Byrne potentially going to collide with him. So that's my take.
What's your take on this, Stu? Because, again, it's another one, if it was the other way around and a Newcastle player had done that, I'm sure, you know, we'd have been up in arms going, clear dive. I mean, he actually won the simulation game as well on 5-5 last night, which is something they give out every week for the biggest dive. But it strikes me that it's kind of human nature. When you're running at that speed and you have someone in front of you, it looks like they're going to bring you down, you try and take evasive action, don't you? And that, more often than not, is kind of leaping to avoid it.
Yeah, although my first sort of, again, this was now further away from where I'm sitting, but I did feel in, even at real time, even at speed, before the benefit of replays, that he had collapsed his heels, that he had looked to thing. And sadly, we are in an era now where players, if they don't exaggerate things or try and draw extra attention to the referee, it's labelled naive. And the English game is miles behind our continental counterparts who know the dark arts and all that sort of stuff. So I think he's probably trying to make sure that, I think he knows he's not going to get the ball. They're probably, you know, he knows that contact, he's anticipating contact. So I think here, upon reflection, at the time I felt, yeah, it's a dive and I don't like diving, so you can't have any complaints. Mm. Upon reflection and hearing the often sort of calm and sensible Kieran McKenna sort of talk about it, I think two things can be true, that it can be given as a free kick to Newcastle, but you don't necessarily have to give a yellow card because you have to be very sure that it was an act of blatant cheating to give the yellow card. And as Joe Hart and others have pointed out, he's running at speed and it's human nature, as you say, to try and evade it. So probably the common sense approach, and maybe a bit of common sense has gone away from officiating now, would have been to say no free kick, but also keep the card in the pocket. And obviously, that ended up proving costly for Mr. Johnson.
Yeah. So if we maybe disagree slightly on that, I'm sure we all agree on the next bit, which is the red card, which is the second yellow card, which is once you're booked, you just can't be making challenges like that. I mean, he literally grabs Ishak round the waist, doesn't he? And kind of pulls him back. There's no way on earth he's going to get away with that, Rossi. Once he's already been booked, he's going.
No, he may just wanted a hug. Isaac just wanted to have a nice little, you know, little hug there. But because that was like 7 minutes later or something crazy like that. So still like probably still in fresh in his mind, Ben, you know, that he's on a yellow. But yeah, very silly. And as I said, he's an experienced player. You'd think he would be learning his lesson from, you know, from getting booked 7 minutes earlier. And yeah, when you're coming up against a striker like that, I know Isaac's obviously a deadly striker, but you just can't be doing that. And yeah. Very silly from Ben, unfortunately.
The first time he's ever been sent off, Stewie, I'd imagine that, as we've talked about before, everything needs to go Town's way for them to have any chance. The second straight week, they've got a player sent off. And if Leif Davis's was obviously slightly different last week in the nature of it, this one was, I guess, similar to the Tuan Zebi one at Villa, yeah. Wasn't it? Where there'd been a kind of controversial first booking, and then the second one falls into the what is he thinking when he's already been booked sort of challenge.
Exactly that. You have to. We can debate the first one as much as you like, but once you know you're on that yellow, you've got to use your brain a little bit more. It's very easy for us to say, sat there, this is the best league in the world, the most athletic players. You have a split second with the things we're analysing in minute detail to make a decision. He's got beaten down the side, and again, human nature sort of kicks in. You want to stop that person. And your body reacts probably before your brain even sort of breaks down what you're trying to do. But yeah, he just wraps his arms around him, doesn't he? And it's Kieran McKenna then sort of says, he was sort of screaming at the time, it's his first foul, it's his first foul. And surely, again, a bit of common sense comes into play. Kind of get where he's coming from, but you leave yourself a little bit open to sort of discretion is applied. By the letter of the law, it's a second yellow, isn't it? So, for the second weekend in a row, Ipswich are down to 10 men. And the big shame was, for that first half an hour, certainly for that first 20 minutes, game plan was going according to plan. I thought, you know, Ipswich were down to bare bones, but, you know, there was a feeling that maybe had galvanised them in training, that it's backs to ball, running towards adversity. It sort of meant the game plan with effectively kind of four centre-halves across the back four meant that they just sort of funnelled Newcastle wide, were happy to defend balls into the box, were doing that reasonably comfortably, were getting some nice little moments on the breakaway. It was all going to plan. And then a lot of those incidents that we discussed, the disagreement between Palmer and Burgess, the red card, they ended up sort of shooting themselves in the foot, really, and turning the game against themselves rather than Newcastle wrestling it away from them. And that's frustrating.
Before we get to the other stuff, Stu, don't expose the flaws in this concept. You know, I was sitting here in our various bedrooms as middle-aged men, very much past there. We tried to play Premier League football, we'd die in under 30 seconds. So the very concept of us sitting here kind of passing comment on these elite athletes is clearly a flawed concept. But we look past that because that's what we're paid to do. Next up, Stu, I've got a question for you. Jack Clark gets sacrificed again.
Not literally, but yeah.
Well, no, that would be a story, wouldn't it? take that to VAR. He gets brought off for the second week in a row. I note from reading your observations that you maybe thought that's a little bit unfair, particularly given your frustrations within CISO, which obviously bear fruit in terms of then giving away a penalty, but also wider in terms of his defensive effort. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, we'll come on to the penalty in a minute and then CISO's role. That is not the prime example of what frustrates me a little bit. Well, not a little bit, a lot with Julio and CISO at times. There was an incident earlier in the game and these sort of things maybe go unnoticed a bit. He's got plenty of energy off the ball in the final third. He'll press hard. I mean, the Jack Clark early chance came from Enciso charging down Dan Byrne and the ball falling loose. So I don't sort of question his off-the-ball efforts at the top end of the pitch. But when he's kind of forced to get back into a low block and the team's trying to defend as a unit, he really isn't up for it at all. He sort of strolls around. He's very passive in the way he closes down the ball. At times, he just stops when there's a 1-2 and the runner goes. There was an example of that. I can't remember the exact minute, fairly early on in the game, that riled me a little bit watching. So when it came to the decision then to you've got to take off an attacker to bring on a defender after the red card. For the second weekend running for it to be Jack Clark, I really felt for him because Clark had started well. He'd had that chance I've mentioned a couple of times that he just put wide. He won a foul off Kieran Trippier fairly early in the game. But I believe he had a good game for Sunderland against Trippier last season in the Cup. He's had to be really patient for his chances this season, Jack Clark. We'll get a stage where he's one of, fully fit attackers for Ipswich. And he's getting hooked off in that part of the game. I just felt his off the ball, he would offer more off the ball than Julio and Ciso in the 10-man environment. But yeah, for the second weekend running, it was him off and Ciso stayed on.
Yeah, and then we come to the penalty, Ross. Before we get to that, though, when I suggested that none of us could last 30 seconds in the Premier League, your kind of shrug seems to suggest that you fancy yourself in the Premier League. Well, I could do a job, he says.
Yeah, I could do a 90 minutes, 30 seconds, like Paul Lambert used to say to Freddie Sears. You know, just chuck on, just run about for a bit when we're like 3-0 down. I could do that. Yeah.
About that quote.
Yeah. So, yeah, I could do that.
I would pay good money. I mean, Town haven't got anything to play for now. I'd pay good money for you just to be chucked on for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so. Just see how long you last before you rupture yourself internally.
I honestly think that's how you improve extra time as a spectacle. We talked about rule changes in sport, that at every minute into extra time, you have to take off a professional and pluck someone from the crowd to replace them. And you keep doing that.
I like it. Do you remember we were talking about the cliche cards you could play as well? Easy for a nan, that one. My nan could have scored that. Bring your nan on. That would be great. Anyway, getting back to the game, Rossi, Julio and Ciso, penalty. This, again, for me, falls into the wow, that is soft bracket. Agree?
Yes. Maybe Jacob Murphy should have been booked. You know, Ben Johnson got booked for, you know.
The problem is there's contact, though, isn't there? That's the problem with this one. There is contact, but good Lord. That is so soft.
It took them ages to decide as well, because obviously it went to VAR, and I was just sitting there just thinking, oh my God. I saw actually a Newcastle fan just like right in front of the ref, just going, like, come on, mate, time, got my dinner soon, you know, after this, got a roast dinner. But yeah, consistency once again, that's a whole podcast just discussing that. But then Julio shouldn't maybe. Don't know why he's actually in the box in that position. Was it because of... Did they have a corner? Did they have a corner, Stu? Or was they...
I don't think it came from a corner. Can't quite remember. It certainly came from a period of pressure, didn't it? Palmer had kept sort of deflected one out of his legs. Wolfie headed one off the line, didn't he? Tonali hit the curled one against Angle of bar and post. Yeah. So the pressure was building. I can't quite remember, but I imagine he was sort of tucked in as a left-sided player to kind of help out at that stage. And as I've already said, helping out defensively is not his forte. And I think if you look back at it, he kind of gets drawn towards the ball and then Murphy runs off of him. So instead of worrying about the threat in behind, he gets drawn to the ball when that situation was covered. And then he suddenly goes, he sees in his kind of periphery that Murphy's run off of him. And it's a bit of a panicked, just sticks his arm out to try and stop him because he knows he's run off of him. Again, don't give the referee a decision to make. Yes, it's really soft. Yes, Murphy exaggerates it. But the difference here is, I think with the Johnson one, that I don't think there is contact. Yeah. Dan Byrne does get his leg out of the way this time. Clearly, he does grab his arm. And then we get into debate about once the ref doesn't give it, is there enough for VAR and should the bar be high enough for a clear and obvious error? I do think it ultimately has to be given and the right decision is reached and that is ultimately what we're looking for. But my God, does it suck the joy and the everything out of the stadium just adds to confusion, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, again, as I say, I was listening to it on the radio, the commentator, I think it was John Murray, I can't remember, but he was very critical of... Because obviously there were quite a lot of incidents in the first half where it went to VAR and he was saying, once again, fans have got no idea what's going on. They've got no idea why this has been stopped. They don't know what's going on. Who cares about the fans? He's sort of sarcastically saying it's not like they're important. So I think he's very much with you, Stu, as someone who won't miss. He'll obviously still have to commentate on VAR games, but you won't miss it at all, Stu, when we're back in the championship.
They'll point out that more decisions are correct than ever before. And ultimately, isn't that what we all want, that you get more decisions right than wrong? But if the trade-off for that, I've said it loads of times, is what we have, this kind of kills the momentum of the game, adds confusion to the crowd, takes away that instant joy of celebration because you don't know if it's definitely going to be given. You know, in the old days of pre-VAR or back in the championship, I don't think anyone no one would have batted an eyelid if that, you know, no foul, get on with it. And that would have been that, wouldn't it? So don't enjoy VAR, but do think ultimately it was a penalty. And I think Julio has to take a chunk of the blame there for the way he dealt with that situation.
Mm. All right then, Ross. Well, we get to the end of a very eventful first half. Town are 1-0 down. Is there anything we can talk about from the second half that's worthy of note in terms of individual performances, moments, anything like that? Because I don't want to spend too long laboriously breaking this one down.
We've had this discussion before, but you know, obviously the last goal of the game was a set piece. So yes. A set piece conceded, and obviously it's been a trend basically in 2025. First half of the Premier League season, pretty solid. I don't know the numbers top of my head, but you know, we didn't concede too many goals from set pieces. But now, I'm sure Stu's got it noted down somewhere. But it's probably last 20 plus goals. You know, it's probably most of them have been from set pieces, unfortunately.
That is worthy of note, isn't it, Stu? I think you actually mentioned it in your verdict, didn't you? But McKenna's made reference to having 10 men and making that difficult to defend set pieces sometimes, particularly short corners. But this was a kind of fairly routine set piece, wasn't it? Will Asula, of course, once linked with Town as well.
Yeah. He was very good when he came on, actually, Will Asula. Don't know if that he is a realistic target for Ipswich as a championship club next year, but someone who can play striker and wide, a bit of size about him, certainly had a bit of confidence when he came on. Both the Newcastle goals in the second half came from set pieces. The Burn one was from a short corner, so both the Arsenal goals in the second half, short corners, this one, short corner. Trippier just stands the ball up for Big Dan Burn to go and attack on the line. And then the third is a straight from a corner delivery. Trippier just straight onto the head of Asula. Brilliant headed finish. But yeah, Ross is right. First half of the season, Ipswich were right up there in terms of least number of goals conceded from set pieces. Probably from that Man United game onwards, where they just didn't get to grips with Maguire and co at set pieces. It's been a bit of a struggle. So that's certainly something when Ipswich are kind of analysing and reflecting, certainly another thing that they'll need to get their teeth into why that's been the case.
Okay. Let's hear from Kieran McKenna then post-match. Obviously, this is in the wake of relegation being confirmed. And that's clearly, I guess, what we better spend a bit of time talking about. Let's hear from Kieran first of all.
You reflect as the season goes on, and probably since the Wolves game, we knew that the climb was going to be too big. So, of course, there's things to reflect on. Of course, there's things that, you know, we look back and think maybe we could have done better or differently. But we look back from a position where we've tried to do the right thing in a pretty unique jump coming from League One to the Premier League in two seasons. Hasn't been done in a very long time, and I'm not sure it'll be done in the way that we've done it again. So there isn't really a rule book for that. Already people know and can see that the jump from the Championship to League One has, you know, or from the Championship to the Premier League has grown and has become really difficult, and we're in a pretty unique position in the summer. So we've tried to act in the best interests of the long-term, you know, future of the club while still giving us a chance to be competitive this year. I think we've been competitive for the most part. We couldn't have worked any harder. And we've tried to do the right things. So, of course, there's, I think, things that we look back on and think we've made good decisions and done the right things. And there's things we look back on, we think maybe, you know, certain things didn't work out or we could have done a little bit differently. But I think those reflections, to be honest, are always going to be in detail, best kept in-house.
All right then, Rossi. So Town are relegated. We've known for a long time it's going to happen. And I don't want to spend ages breaking down what relegation means and why it's happened, all that kind of stuff. You're our man with the fans. What was the mood like afterwards?
Obviously everyone's disappointed and sad, but obviously it wasn't, I don't think there was like any tears in that away end. I think obviously the last time we got relegated from a league was obviously in 2019, when obviously Town fans clapped off Paul Lambert and co. Obviously, that we were sleeping to relegation, weren't we? Unfortunately, in that period. This time around, it's such a cover, you know, fan base with Kieran McKenna and co. We know we're in a good position. Obviously, yeah, we wanted to stay up. Obviously, that was the goal this year, and obviously they failed on that. But you know, I think the fans have sort of known for a while. We've all known, haven't we? I'm sure even, you know, Kieran McKenna and co. You know, you can be as positive as possible. But deep down, I think after the Wolves game, you sort of knew it was going to be a massive mountain to climb. So Yeah, obviously everyone's sad and disappointed, but there's a lot of positives to look ahead to what could come next season, and hopefully we'll be back stronger. And as some people have already said, hopefully we'll be back at Newcastle in 14 months' time.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Wolfenden made a point after the game, didn't he, that essentially that they just want, they're motivated to come back and prove themselves, essentially, and give Newcastle a real good game in 14 months' time. Apologies, friends. I don't know how much of the audio is coming across, but my Teams is going mental. I have actually closed it, but it still seems to, like the Undertaker rising from the dead, it just keeps on beeping. And I don't think I can do anything else.
I don't think it's coming through on the audio. I think you're okay.
That's all right, then. That's good. Stu, relegation. We have, on this podcast, since we started it, we've spoken about two relegations and two promotions. The first time we spoke about relegation was, of course, back in the first Paul Hurst season, the only Paul Hurst season. And I think it's fair to say, feels a bit different now.
Yeah, chalk and cheese, isn't it? I think that was kind of blind optimism, that kind of three little birds, everything's going to be all right reaction to that, almost a bit of relief that death by a thousand cuts decline in the championship had finally come to an end, and everyone trying to convince themselves desperately that it was going to take a step back to take two forwards. And ultimately that proved the case, but only after 4 years in League One and an ownership change and a lot of things happening. This time that optimism and hope is based on reality, on facts, on, you know, Ipswich would have been, I don't know what the odds were, would have been on Ipswich to get promoted from the Championship the year they did, but they were certainly major underdogs right up until the very end. You know, there was a feeling Ipswich had no right to compete with the likes of Leicester and Southampton and Leeds. Some of those clubs who'd just spent decade plus in the Premier League, Ipswich had been away for 22 years, but compete they did. And they're going to come back a year later, certainly seen as ahead of Leicester and Southampton, or in a better place than both of those football clubs, which is not something to be underestimated. Certainly a lot more stability than both those clubs, who've had a chaotic season with managerial changes and whatnot. So, yeah, I would imagine Ipswich will be probably the favourites, I would say, as we're sitting here now talking about the teams that have come up from the Championship, and obviously we know the three that are going down. So it's clear that, you know, the club's come a long way in a short space of time, but I don't want to get too carried away, and we've got plenty of time to get our teeth into what the Championship is. But
going too soon, yeah.
Yeah, Luton is obviously the elephant in the room, the counter argument to how things don't necessarily, that is no guarantee that Ipswich will come flying back next season. But I think, you know, Ipswich are far more likely to be a Burnley or a Sheffield United than they are a Luton next season, hopefully.
Yeah. Right, let's hear from Sam Morsey, who Alex spoke to after the game about relegation. And then when we come back, I've got some comments from Paul Merson to put to you, Stu, about how you stay in the Premier League.
Me.
Sam, it's relegation confirmed today, and a pretty bit of pill to swallow, even though I'm sure you knew it was probably coming for a few weeks.
Yeah, obviously I'm disappointed, but you know, the lads have give everything they got, and you know, there's a real sort of hunger to keep going and keep getting points on the board this season.
It has been one that maybe the fact that you've kind of had that feeling, the manager said, you know, it's probably going to be one where the journey's going to come to an end this season, that kind of softens the blow in a way that you've been able to expect this. It's not come out of the blue, it's not a final day or anything like that.
Yeah, it's part of the journey. Obviously we haven't won enough games. You know, we've been close but not close enough.
What's the mood been like? Because after that, when you see clubs get relegated, you often see players down on their haunches, dejected. It didn't really feel like that, but what's it been like in the dressing room?
No, it can't be like that really, because we know the club's on a really forward trajectory, and we know it's a great opportunity to come back. And again, players are playing for their futures as well. And, you know, if they want to be on board, if they want to be on the train, it's going to have to be hard work, humility, work to the very end of the season, because the manager and the players won't accept anyone not putting in no standards and that commitment to the club. So that's what it has to be, especially in a difficult moment. And I think sometimes in life, you know, how you are in the difficult moments will define you in the successful moments as well.
What's the manager said now that relegation has been confirmed?
Yeah, he said proud of the efforts, but there's obviously things we need to work on, and it's got to be motivation for, 12 months' time making a return.
Do you need to feel the hurt from this?
Of course, yeah, of course. It's, we had a goal and we didn't achieve it, and, that's one we have to own individually and own as a group and come back stronger, and these periods in players' careers, they can define them, and players can go either way, so we have to make sure we're a really strong group and as many of us as possible go the right way.
You've had plenty of ups and downs in your career so far, so you know what this kind of moment can do for you, can almost kind of provide a positive thing for you, can't it?
Yeah, no, you have to. It's it's life, it's football. Not every season is going to be your season, and it's about going to be how you react to it and your motivation and your commitment, and that's going to define you. So we're not going to drop our heads too much. It's going to hurt, we're disappointed, but we're going to keep going and stick together to the end of the season.
Okay, there's Sam speaking well as ever. Yes, Stu, how you survive in the Premier League? Now, clearly, there's a narrative, a conversation around the gap in the Premier League, and for the second straight season, the promoted sides have gone straight back down. Paul Merson, in comments that I have written up and will be putting online in due course, because I think they're interesting, it will certainly provoke a bit of debate, was asked about this in the aftermath of Town being relegated, and he said that it frustrates him when teams come up and try and play football, like they've swallowed a total soccer book, he said. What you got to do when you get in the Premier League, you got to hoof it up the other end of the pitch. Don't play it around at the back. Don't give goals away. You've got to do that. Finish 17th. Don't worry about trying to be Nottingham Forest or Brentford or anyone like that. Finish 17th first season, get another 100 million, do that 3 years, then you are Brentford. Simple. Stu. Now, obviously, I'm paraphrasing there. There's a lot of things that he said. But that narrative, that kind of point of view, which is, you'd say, espoused quite a lot by the older generation of footballers, hoof it, get it up the other end of the pitch, don't play football. You can't do it unless you've got top draw players. Is one that is quite a regular thing that I see. It's too simplistic to say that's nonsense, but what's your take on that?
Yeah, I've heard similar sort of rhetoric from, I think, Roy Keane talked in general. Yep. About, obviously, there's this debate now about how is this cycle a concern, which obviously it is. I mean, it's only the second season in a row this has happened, so I think we're still too early. Mm. Sample size is too small, to use a McKennaism, to be talking about this being a trend at the moment. But obviously, the more it happens, it becomes self-fulfilling, doesn't it? Because less parachute payment, more money, then the more teams stay up, the more money they get, the more established they get, and it becomes a bit more of a closed shop. But on the point of kind of, I think Keane just said, just make yourselves harder to beat.
Yeah, which is basically what Merson was. That was, yeah, what he was saying, yeah.
I think there is an element to that. I think Brentford are probably an example that they started a little bit more pragmatically on their Premier League journey, and they got their feet under the table before they started to try and play a little bit more expansive, getting the right players to be able to do that. Has there been a, I hate this phrase, tactical naivety about the way Kieran McKenna's approached things this season? On the flip side of that, Ipswich is best football and their best chance of getting results came in the first half of the season, where they played more expansive and they attacked games. Mm. And they got at Liverpool on the opening day of the season and they almost won some of those home games. And then it was the Newcastle home game just prior to Christmas where they, got beat 4-0, looked wide open. And that's when he changed to more of a back three and a more of a pragmatic system. And they've conceded more goals in the second half of the season, playing that, inverted commas, more defensive way. I think it gets boiled down into far too simplistic terms. As I've said before, I do think Kieran McKenna has been more tactically flexible than people have given him credit for. On the flip side of it, you've then got Alan Pardew saying, it wasn't good enough the way Ipswich tried to didn't try and take on Arsenal and didn't get on the front foot, and attack is the best form of defence, and all that sort of stuff. So it's a really difficult balancing act. And ultimately, I'm not sure if Ipswich had tried to do it in any way, shape or form. It comes down to the players you've got. And as we've said, no shame in saying this, but they're just, the quality gap's been too big. The depth gap's been too big. The financial gap's been too big. So many things have just been onto a bit of a losing cause from the start, probably.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, someone on the Sky Sports panel did then say to Mercer, well, you know, it's just a great story. I think they can come again. And he went, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Next season, they'll be great. They've signed players. I think what he said was they've signed players that aren't quite good enough for the Premier League, but too good for the Championship, which, you know, there may be some element of truth in that.
Could you have done that? That is the reality of it. You've just been away for 22 years from the Premier League. You've done well to sign players that are too good for the Championship, given that. To say that you should have done more, I would argue, is a bit naive. It's all very well sitting there going, oh, they should have attacked it more. They should have spent more. I don't know. Some of these are just a bit sort of throwaway sound bites. I've sort of seen. It's difficult. If you sat here and asked me to give an opinion on any other football club, certainly in a league that I don't watch all the time, you can scratch the surface and you can have a little look at a league table and you can glean a bit of information. But those of us that have kind of watched and followed the club in a bit more depth kind of know the bigger picture. And I think that's why the reaction from the fans has been what it is, because they can see everything that's gone into this season.
Nice bit of rational punditry there, Stu. I like it. Shall we hear from Kieran McKenna about the future?
Yes.
You know, to establish in the Premier League after the two promotions this season would have been fantastic. And, you know, we've given it our best shot, but we're going to fall short. But I think in almost every aspect, to be honest, from work at the training ground, work at the stadium, staff infrastructure, people infrastructure, the squad, strength and development of players, I think in every area we're much stronger than what we were a couple of years ago. So, you know, that doesn't guarantee us anything. There's no guarantees that we continue that progression. But if we work hard again, if we continue to work as hard as we are, if we do the right things, if we make the right decisions, then I think the club's got a great, you know, chance to push on again.
Clearly, Burnley is a model. What makes you confident that you can be a Burnley, Sheffield United, Leeds rather than Luton and Darmstadt?
Look, I think I've said it many times, every club's their journey. Burnley have been, whatever, 10 years in the Premier League and then got relegated once and came back down and went back up and came back down. So we're not in that position. Leeds, Leicester, Southampton, we're on a really completely different journey than them. So, you know, we have to focus on ourselves. We know what we're going into next year. We know how challenging and competitive that league can be. But we feel that we're in a strong position as a football club. So, you know, we just need to focus on ourselves and finish the season as strong as we can, work well over the summer, and then, you know, crack into the next challenge.
I've got to ask you, when we talk about the future, Rossi, and if my teams doesn't stop going off, I'm going to have to drive to Microsoft Towers and burn it down. It's really annoying. Are you getting that as well, boys? Because it's that sports reporter group, isn't it? Ross never uses teams anyway, so he just completely ignores it. Rossi, next season, Ipswich Town are in the Championship. We know that they're going to be there with Leicester and Southampton. We know they're also going to be there with Birmingham. They're also, however, going to be there with Hollywood FC, Wrexham. How do you feel about this? Because I know a lot of football purists are absolutely disgusted that Wrexham are going to be in the Championship next season.
Obviously, you know, I feel sorry for obviously Wickham. Obviously, they've got to now do the lottery or the playoffs. Obviously, Cameron Humphreys there. But yeah, obviously, yeah, it's a Hollywood story. And like, fair play to Wrexham. Like, they've done what no one other team has done before, back to back promotions from National League to the Championship. I know they've spent a lot of money. And obviously, yeah, got the Hollywood stars. But yeah, that will be a circus, I'm sure, when we play them. And that will probably be guaranteed the first game.
Oh, yeah, of I think the season 100%, yeah.
On Sky on Friday night or something at Wrexham, most likely. But, you know, I haven't really got much to really say about it, really. It's just, yeah, fair play to them. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do in the Championship, because obviously they sort of bossed every league they've gone in pretty much. But Championship is a bit of a step up, and be interesting to see who they're going to sign. I think Jamie Vardy's been like rumoured, so that'll be interesting. They signed loads of strikers. I think they've got like five or six. They've got Stephen Fletcher, obviously Paul Mullen. They've got Jack Marriott, a former Town player. They've got somebody else. What's J. Rodriguez, I think they've got as well. And there's other strikers you can name. I think they've even got, what's his name? Doesn't matter, but they've got loads of strikers. But yeah, Wrexham you know, obviously they were not a club for one stage when they were like really down in the bottom leagues, but obviously they've been saved by the Hollywood Stars. But yeah, I've not got anything bad to say about them, but I'm not also like that fussed about their story either. So I haven't even watched their documentary. It's just not for me.
Excellent. Excellent analysis. Yep. Stewie, Wrexham, do you fancy shaking Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney hands next season when Town inevitably face them? You are obviously a football purist, so you must be absolutely disgusted that they've spent the Hollywood money to get into the Championship. Game has gone. Filthy.
I wouldn't mind meeting Blake Lively if she comes to Bournemouth Road. I haven't got a bit like Ross, really. I haven't got strong opinions on it, actually. I haven't watched the documentary, so maybe I would feel differently if I watched that. But I actually think it's quite nice when teams sort of climb through the pyramid like that. It's backs up that what we love about the English game is the pyramid and this kind of dare to dream. And no matter how low things get at a football club, you never know what's around the corner and how quickly things can turn. The way sort of Luton have playing this crazy game of snakes and ladders over the last decade or so, others in it as well. So, at least there'll be a bit of a narrative around that game, which is what we're after for sure.
100%. It's going to be interesting to see how they fare, you know, financially, because although clearly they're quite wealthy individuals, they're not anywhere near rich enough to be owners at this sort of level, are they? Championship even, that you need to have a lot of money to do that competitively. So we'll see how they get on. Certainly Birmingham are going to be interesting next season. Right then, let's draw a line under this whole damn conversation by listening to one more clip. You've served up a bunch of clips, Ross. I'm going to use them all. This is Kieran McKenna and Sam Worsley. I think this says message to fans, Ross. Is this the one? Message to fans. Right then, let's hear this.
Look, we've had it plenty of weeks and it's humbling, really, and incredibly appreciated. I think we've got an incredible supporter base, as the team who we face today do, and, you know, some similarities there. And it was even the singing at the end for Sir Bobby was, you know, I think was fantastic. But yeah, the reception that we got is so appreciated. It's humbling, and we want to keep earning it. We know it's not just for our efforts this year. I think the supporters can see that the players have given everything today, as they have on so many days, but they've, you know, we've fallen short. But I think they know that everyone's given everything, and I think they also know that the journey has been an incredible one, and this is now a step back. But if we stick together and do the right things, then, you know, it can still be a great springboard to push on again. So, no, we really appreciate it.
Awesome from me. That moment at the end with the fans, we've had quite a few of them this season, but this one in particular, the goals going in, you're down, yeah. You get that feeling. It's pretty special, that having that at the end.
It is special, and when the good times come back, for sure, the fans are going to really deserve it, because the way they're stuck with us has been phenomenal, and not every football club does that at all. So the stick will stuck with us to the very end. We really appreciate that, and we're going to do our best to pay them back.
Right then, Rossi, let's draw a line of that, shall we? We'll move from the sadness of relegation to the joy, the ecstasy of promotion. So we have another promotion to put on this season. You were at Felix yesterday, where Ipswich Town Ladies won promotion to the Championship. They'll be playing the same league, not exactly the same league as Ipswich Town men next season, but the same level. And you've obviously followed the team longer than most. That's how you got your job in the first place with us. You started sending us Ipswich Town Ladies reports. So it must have been quite a special day for you yesterday.
Yeah, obviously it's a whole different team to when I first started covering. There's one player still there, and that is Natasha Thomas, obviously.
Legend. Hashtag legend.
Part of the furniture. Nine seasons. So it'll be next season will be my 10th season covering the club. So a little anniversary there. Nine years from the fourth tier, playing in front of maybe 40 fans, you know, a man and a dog, and, you know, obviously family, to a sold out Martello Ground and Felixstowe to celebrate promotion to the Championship for the first time in the club's history was great. And obviously seeing so many great, you know, familiar faces who have been part of the journey as well. It was just a great day. And obviously they won 8-0, so that was a great way to sort of wrap up the season. They've deserved that. You know, Joe Sheehan has built a great team. He's just like Kieran McKenna, really, pretty much. He's like well spoken. Obviously built a young team. He plays really good football. They've deserved it. You know, they've had some heartbreak the last few years. You know, 2 years ago, they missed out on the title on goal difference to Watford. Last year was a bit of a disappointing season, but there was a lot of injuries and a lot of things that sort of came up. But this year they recruited really well, and they've just been ruthless. They've just been, you know, every game they've gone, they've only lost two games all season. They've conceded just 10 goals in the league. So it just proves they are, you know, champions elect because of that. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how they do in the championship. But players like Natasha Thomas and Sophie Pescott, Maria Boswell, Kai Robertson, Luce O'Brien, I'm naming them all, but those sort of players have been there for, you know, when they first got promoted from the fourth tier. Because obviously COVID stopped them for 2 years. You know, they had to like play in the fourth tier and they were battering teams when because they were too good for that level. But because of COVID, it stopped them. Thankfully, they got the application in 2021. And then the last 4 years, it's been ups and downs, but they finally reached the championship. So, yeah. It's yeah, it was great to see a sellout as well. You know, fan base. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of young girls in that crowd being inspired to hopefully be, you know, Chiefs Town women's player one day.
There's a lot. We covered that a lot yesterday. There's videos out there. You and Tom who were there giving your verdict. There's obviously a special game day as well. There's a gallery that's gone up this morning. There's gonna be more action going online throughout the day. Fantastic story, Rossi. I think you're right as well to draw comparisons between Sheehan and McKenna because they are kind of very similar in terms of the way they talk and both very thoughtful and eloquent and kind of progressive thinkers. I think Kieran was there yesterday as well, wasn't he? I saw a picture of him.
Mark Ashton as well, and there's a few of the staff just in general. I think they're obviously it's sort of a nice one club thing. So yeah, that was great. And McKenna was with his family, so I'm sure that was just a nice day out, you know, at the seaside and just you know, obviously seeing a team get promoted. You know, it's a weird contrast, isn't it, from Saturday with going down for one team and then another team celebrating. I'm sure the end of season do is going to be interesting because. Yeah, you've got one team going down and then you've got another team going up, you know, going up. But thankfully, as a whole, the club is in such a good place. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what both teams do in the championship.
Well, let me ask you this then, Rossi. I'm going to stick with you. This is your turn to do some heavy lifting because me and Sue talked about this at the end of last week's pod. And I said it would be interesting to see how they fare in the championship because on the face of it, they've got some very good players. They're clearly too good for the level they're at the moment. You know, Sophie Pescott, absolute superstar. Tom, you know, Natasha Thomas, Lucy O'Brien, all those. How do you think they'll do in the championship? Because Mark Ashton has talked before about wanting to establish themselves in the championship. What's the step up like between the level they're playing at the moment, which they're clearly too good for, and then the championship? Is it like a big step up, or do you think they'll be okay in terms of competing at that level?
It varies really, because there's been a few teams who have gone up in the last few years. It's basically actually like the Premier League with the men's. The last few years, the team that got promoted, because obviously there's two teams that get promoted from the northern section and the southern section. But the southern section, from what I can think on top of my head, the last few years, teams have gone up and then gone straight back down. So Watford went up 1 year. Lewis went up 1 year as well. But this time around, Portsmouth have stayed up and Sheffield United have gone down. So Portsmouth are obviously a team that sort of won the title last year and have sort of been our rival the last few years in the third tier. But they've been able to stay up, but just about stay up. So there is going to be a step up and there will, I'm sure, be some players that they will recruit and there may be some players that may leave. But I'm sure Joe will want to stick with most of this team because they've done so well and they're still such a young squad. That's another good thing. This is such a young squad. And really recruited well last summer and they brought in players who actually have played in the championship before, like the likes of Charlotte Fleming, Ella Rutherford, Shauna Geyer, Negri, the goalkeeper, Grace Garrett as well. So they're players that have played at this level before. So that'd be good and I'm sure they'll bring in other players. But I think they'll do okay. I think they'll be like a Southampton. You know, Southampton were another team. They sort of battled a few years back and Southampton are now established championship team and once again, they're backed by the men's team. There's money there to be spent, obviously now full-time. I think that's another thing that's added to this team. They've been able to have full-time players, been able to train every day, have amazing staff to improve them. So, yeah, I'm going to put my body on the line here and say, yeah, they're going to stay up and they're going to compete. I don't know if they'll do back-to-back promotions like the men, but you never know.
You never know. And Stu, obviously we talked about this last week, but as clearly, in terms of the whole feel around the club, you know, the momentum of it all, you know, we know how important the women's team are to the whole setup, to Ashton and the owners. Just a tremendous thing to see.
100%. Yeah. It's this sort of one club feel that Mark Ashton and everyone is trying to engender. I think that the women's side, particularly for what Ipswich Town is as a family community club, that we talk about it in those terms, it's really important that the women's side of things, and it brings, you know, the inspirational piece, as Ross says, for young girls, as a father of one myself, I think is really important. And we're going to benefit from the new training facilities as well. They're going to get, you know, their own area of the training pitch, which is great. So we talk about the journey the men's team has been on. I've dipped in and out of the women's coverage over the years, but I've seen from that going from a pretty amateurish setup not that long ago that felt quite sort of disassociated with the football club, really. It was Ipswich Town in name only for a little while. The way it's kind of been embraced under the new ownership and the rate of which it's grown is fantastic.
Yeah, really is. As I say, loads of reaction and coverage of that online. And also, Ross, you're going to put together a little podcast special, aren't you, from the day yesterday? Lots of reaction that's going to go out, I think, tomorrow morning. So give that a listen as well. Something to look forward to next season. Boys, anything else to mention? What was covering a game? I know you've done it before, Stewie, at St James's Park, but not for a little while. I know from watching your behind the scenes thing, that little Perspex. Go and watch it if you've not seen it, because it's sort of a Perspex half box essentially in front of you, which you were trying to explain. I can only think, as someone who's obviously worked remotely, that must be incredibly frustrating, because I'm assuming you can't actually see what you're typing because of this kind of thing over the top of it. So, as you say, you're sort of having to sort of sit like that kind of thing to try and see what you're typing.
My back/neck is in bits now, coupled with a sort of a 10-12 hour round trip in the car as well on top of that. It's a very low press box at Newcastle, which I like from time to time, because especially at Premier League level, it gives you a real appreciation for the speed and athleticism of these players. I prefer in general having a higher vantage point and tactically being able to see shape and stuff like that. But as I said, I love St James's Park. I thought the Ipswich fans, given they're right up in the gods in that massive end behind the goal. Can't remember which end that is. Struggle with stand names. Anyway, they were up there. I thought they made fantastic noise. That little Perspex, it's like a four. It's there because you're so low down on a wet day, a wet, windy day. It's to protect your laptop, but it sort of goes up and over your laptop, and you have to kind of, really slump down in your seat to be able to see what you're writing, which wasn't ideal, but I can hear sounds of tiny violins being played.
I enjoyed the video when you were kind of explaining that Troy Deeney sat behind you, kind of just minding his own business. I love that. Rossi, what did you make of the food? Because I think AJ shared a clip of it. And I, obviously, talk about behind the scenes. Steak, peppercorn sauce, jacket potato and baked beans, was it?
Yes, dude did look at mine and go, what are you doing? But, you know, if it's
In fairness to Ross, it was a bit of like a surprise meal, I'd describe it. You go up, you never quite know what you're going to get. So you go up there and then they look at you and you just sort of say, whatever you've got would be great, thank you. And it was sort of revealed one by one under those kind of metallic serving things. So every one was a surprise. So first of all was, do I attempt to do a Geordie accent here? It's the big question. Do you want it? Do you want it? Okay. Yeah. Apologies. Do you want a steak, man?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I will have a steak. Thank you. So he puts a steak.
Oh, wait, lad.
Yeah. You want peppercorn sauce, man? Peppercorn sauce. Next one, jacket potato, man. I'll have a jacket potato with that. Then you sort of got to the end, and then you realised there was the cheese and baked beans scenario. I do want cheese and baked beans on my jacket potato, but I don't really want that with steak and peppercorn sauce. So I held back. Ross just went in for a penny, in for a pound, get the baked beans on there. Yeah. It sort of all merged together in a baked beans, peppercorn sauce combination. And I heard a few people across the room who had done similar saying, it's not that bad, actually. So maybe it's a combination that's been undiscovered.
What was the Hutchie controversial jacket potato meal? Was it?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
What it was, jacket potato and gravy. I can't remember. I wish I could remember. I shouldn't have brought it up. But Stu, I assume with you obviously being a gym monster, you asked for 17 steaks, did you?
I'll be honest. The gym has completely
has it?
I'm completely gone during the house move and everything that's been going on. I'm out of habit. Big time at the moment, so I need to get myself going again.
You've got space for a home gym now, surely?
Not quite.
I would, by the way, I would give you a solid 9 out of 10 for that accent.
Thanks.
That was better than I was expecting. Is that your best one? Have you got any others in the locker?
I don't think so. No, you need to push Alex when he's back on some of his accents because they all end up in a sort of generic Yorkshire, no matter where they are. That seems to be where he lands. He's got a very good Scouse.
Yeah,
I'll give him that because you think he's got some ties to Liverpool. So maybe in the build up to Everton, well, you can put him on the spot.
Absolutely, we'll definitely be doing that. Friends, anything else to mention before we take our leave? Have you got any other items of business you wish to discuss?
I was going to wait for Stu there, but I've got one quickly, and that was at the end of the game when the Town fans were coming out, because obviously I go out and speak to the Cowie Army to get their thoughts, and it's like where the way end is. It's basically like a car park, like a multi-story car park, how the stadium's built. So when obviously the Town fans were, leaving, and obviously they're sort of connected with the Newcastle fans, but there's like obviously stewards sort of separating them. And there was just like, just basic them clapping the Town fans and obviously singing "There's Only One," Bobby Robson. And that was a nice little touch. And you probably hear that actually on game day when I'm filming the first interview. That was just a nice little touch, and it just proves how the connection that both clubs have got. But that was a nice little ending from the day at St James's. Just the fans, two football clubs together. One obviously going to be playing Champions League football most likely next season, and one obviously playing Championship football next year. But nice little touch.
There can't be many football clubs, indeed, in England or around the world where they've got the same statue. Well, it's not the same statue, but the same person as immortalised as a statue outside the ground. It's the Bobby. There can't be many that I can think of. Nice special connection, isn't it?
Our statue's a bit better.
Yeah.
I just need to say that.
I think I'd agree with that, having seen both. Yeah. Friends, have you got anything else, Stewie?
Not really. We've got plenty of time to dive into the shortfallings of the season and all of that, haven't we? But 15 points behind West Ham now. Wolves are up to 13th. It wasn't that long ago we were talking about trying to chase down Wolves. I think they've won at least 5 in a row, haven't they? Up to 13th in the table. 15-point gap. I mean, even if we went back through the season and looked at all these, well, they dropped 2 points there or they dropped 1 point there. I know it's 27 points dropped from losing positions, but you can't just bolt those on because, for example, they went 1-0 up at Man City earlier in the season, but you certainly can't say they left anything out there or they deserve more that day. But even if you went through and generously said they deserve more in X, Y and Z and you put all those points on, probably still wouldn't have quite been enough, would it? So that's the reality of it. Plenty of time for McKenna and Co to break it down, as he says. A lot of stuff will remain in-house, but it is what it is. Let's finish on a cliche, Mark. It is what it is. That won't stop us pumping out loads of content around it for the foreseeable. At least it's a shorter turnaround this year.
Exactly. We won't go too soon on it because we've got to fill that summer space. We also obviously have less time. There's a Fabio Wardley fight at Portman Road, and then pretty much the fixtures come out. So we should be golden, and then pretty much we're back into friendlies and all that kind of stuff. Another thing to mention, so you mentioned Wolves there. There was another highlight for me this weekend. I brought in 3 Wolves players in my free hit in the FPL, including Cunha, and I am now clear of you, Watson. What have you got to say for yourself?
I've been languishing
all season, but I'm surging now. Ever since I brought in a bunch of Newcastle players when they thrashed Town, I brought in Anthony Golden, got on him before anyone else. I've risen Lazarus-like from the depth of 1,000+, now up to kind of 500th, and I've overtaken you, my friend. What have you got to say for yourself?
Absolutely shamed. Bottom of my family league as well.
Yeah.
Which contains some Norwich fans in there as well, which adds to the embarrassment. I had a period, look, last few weeks I've been back in it, and I've been playing cards, wild cards, and all that sort of stuff. Mm. I had a good week actually this week, so you must have had a good one.
Yeah.
But I did go through a spell of about 6 or 7 weeks where I just forgot to change the team and captains. I had stuff going on, so yeah. I'm getting the excuses out there.
We've all got stuff going on, Stu. Someone's got the eye of the tiger, though.
Fair.
Rossi, when are we ever going to get another FPL pod?
Hopefully this week, but annoyingly, AJ is now in front of me again. So I don't know. I can't be bothered either. Can't be bothered now. But no, there will be one this week because obviously there's a lot of game weeks to sort of reflect on. And obviously there's only 4 games left to go. So yeah, there's I think a new leader in the FPL league for the Coway Army. Obviously, let's quickly give him a shout out. And Roberto Teller is currently top. It was James Willerton for a bit, but Roberto Teller is now top of the table by 11 points. G2 is in second with a very interesting name. Bazookaring Madeiras. I don't know. I can't say it. But yeah.
I enjoyed the enunciation of James Willerton. That's quite good. Willerton. Right then, friends. Let's take our leave, shall we? Just to remind support our sponsors, use the code KOWAY at stardustspirits.co.uk. Try all their excellent flavour combinations they've got there, as I've already said several times, and I will keep repeating it because it is genuinely good stuff. Single malt, Cascade rum, both very much worthy of getting your hands on, and AJ's a big fan of chocolate rum. One day, Stewie and Rossi will actually try the sponsors' wares as well, and they'll be able to talk about them, which would be nice. Yes, you keep holding up the sampler, Ross, but you never open it. That's the problem.
I'm waiting for a special occasion.
Well, yeah, okay, fair enough. Let's see where we go with that. Friends, the sun is out. Ipswich Town have been relegated, sadly, but the weather's going to be great this week, and the Ipswich Town women have been promoted, so heavy cloud. We'll crack on with the start of our week now. Have a great start to your week, and we'll be back later on this week to build up to the trip to Everton.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.